2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Shut him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, November 16, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. Chet, we're going all over the place tonight. We've got Sixers with radio broadcaster Tom McGinnis joining us. The Big Eagles win. The Big E being inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame. We might even get in some Phillies and even talk some college football if we can fit it all in. And, of course, we will have Fred and Butter Time.
Another action-packed show. And speaking of Fred and Butter Time, I'm already curious to see if anyone's going to be brave and pick the Eagles to upset the Seahawks out in the Great Northwest.
Well, you will have to wait till about the 7:20, 7:21 mark to get to that. And we'll just see who decides. See if Fred and Butter has a has an Eagles lock this week like he did last week.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right. Well, hey, before we get started, let's let our listeners know that we will have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question tonight at about 7:19. And we're still trying to give away for the third time. Maybe the questions are too hard, Chet. The signed 8x10 color photo of Flyers legend and Stanley Cup champion Reggie Leach to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. The shopforkisses.org phone line to answer that question is 929-477-2855. So write it down. It's 929-477-2855.
Make it an easy one tonight, Bill. Make it an easy one. I love Reggie Leach, but, you know, I'm tired of trying to give this one away, so let's get her done tonight, get Reggie out of here, and move on to another prize next week.
Well, this is just going to be a guess. I mean, this one's going to be a guess that it's kind of like a pick-a-number guess. You know what I mean?
All right, and all of our past winners are eligible again, so, you know, if you won 6 weeks ago, you are eligible. You can call in tonight. Except, I guess, one from 3 weeks ago. Adam is not eligible, right? Adam.
Yes. And I will tell you, Chet, this is so I'll just give you a little hint. It's pick a number between 0 and 8. That's what the answer is going to be.
Gosh.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. So, hey, let's talk a little bit Eagles. huge win against the Falcons. 5-4. They're sitting still in last place in the East, but played a heck of a game. They're going out to Seattle this week. But you're glass half full or half empty at this point?
It's half full for me. I mean, let's keep this in mind. If you go back to Labor Day weekend and big trade and everything, and I wrote about this the other day, if you would have told me then that the Eagles with a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback who hadn't played in the previous three preseason games, if you told me then that they were going to be 5-4 at this point in the season, hey, I'd say sign me up. You know, who would have expected that? So they're far exceeding what we thought that they would be doing by this point in the season, given the fact that, you know, they've lost Lane Johnson for a 10-game span here. They've had some other injuries to deal with. They're getting nothing out of their wide receivers. Hopefully they're going to improve all of that as we go forward in the next year or two, as well as beefing up the offensive line. I'm definitely looking at it half full because Doug Peterson is continuing to learn on the job, as is Carson Wentz, and Wentz is only going to get better, especially when he gets more weapons. So, yeah, definitely half full for me.
Well, and me too. And you know, I said at the beginning of the year I thought they'd go 8-8, that they could go 8-8. But I'll tell you, it hasn't happened the way I thought it was going to happen, and I'm much more impressed with how things have gone than I expected. The defense, you know, is not a whole lot different than it was last year, except they're playing a heck of a lot better. And, you know, Jim Schwartz has them guys pretty fired up. And so that in its own self has really been special to watch.
I want to hear you say this right now, Bill. Brandon Graham is the Eagles' defensive MVP. Say it with me.
Without a doubt, Brandon Graham is the Eagles' defensive MVP and a Pro Bowler.
Wow. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
Hey, if it's warranted, you get it. It's not a dislike thing. It's just when you produce, you get kudos, and when you don't, sometimes you get the hammer.
I love it. Yeah, he has done a nice job, as has Malcolm Jenkins. I mean, they still have some problems in the secondary. The linebackers don't always show up. But, yeah, it is a great defense most of the time. Jim Schwartz is definitely doing a fine job. They had a couple of missteps along the way this year. We all know what happened with Detroit and Washington. But, yeah, you got to be encouraged by what you're seeing right there. And also encouraged by Doug Peterson. He's learning on the job. We still have problems sometimes with his play calling, but – you know, he called the timeout in this last game and then said, yeah, I'm going to kick that field goal. And he made the right decision. Maybe didn't have to waste that timeout. It didn't cost him at all. But it was certainly the right decision right there to kick the field goal. He should have done that a few weeks earlier. Maybe we'd have another win. I don't know. But, yeah, give this team credit. They're 5-4 and still in the playoff hunt. And who would have thought that the NFC East would be the best division in football? That's another mystery.
Well, it is, and they you know, we pick them every week, and we always talk about how teams aren't good, you know, specifically the Giants and the Redskins, and they seem to keep winning games. Dallas, with that come-from-behind win against the Steelers, was pretty spectacular. As much as I hate to say it, it looked like that one was in the bag, and it looked like I was headed for a sweep this week in the picks until Ezekiel Elliott ran through a whole jet that you could have run through.
Man, that is a good team. I mean, they have the great offensive line. Zeke Elliott's certainly the real deal. And, you know, Prescott's doing a fine job. Of course, he's got the great receivers that the Eagles don't have. So, you know, he's doing what he has to do. But they got a lot of weapons, and I'm a little jealous as an Eagles fan. But, I mean, let's just give the Cowboys the East right now. I don't see them falling apart, barring a major injury or two. But the Eagles still do have a shot at the playoffs. The Giants could be a wild card team too because, yeah, they're 6-3. I don't know how, but they are. And they have a cake schedule, a lot of easy games ahead. So the Giants are probably going to be, you know, one of those wild card teams in the NFC.
Yeah, and the Redskins are not far behind. That tie, you know, that tie can play for them or play against them that they have, but it throws an odd number in there, and they're not going to go away either.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, getting back to the Eagles, I mean, they won this past week against Atlanta with a great run game, obviously running for about 200 yards. But other teams know that that's how they're going to have to try to win a lot of the time. They know that the Eagles don't have those weapons that we talked about. Nelson Aguilar, I think, is ranked next to last in terms of being a quality receiver in the NFL. So, you know, he stinks. He's been pretty much a bust. Dorial Green-Beckham just showing me nothing of late. They didn't even target him at all last time. So defenses are going to know they're going to key on the Eagles' running attack, and it's going to be a little tough maybe to game plan keeping all that in mind. So, you know, what do the Eagles do? Do they keep trying to run? Do they somehow try to get Bryce Treggs involved more? Do they somehow give Dorial Green-Beckham a kick in the butt and hope that he wakes up one of these weeks? You know, where do you go from here?
Well, I think, and I was going to talk about this when we make our picks, but I'll go ahead and I'll throw it out now without making my pick. But, you know, I think what has to happen is the Eagles have to stretch the field this week, and whether it's Treggs or Beckham or however they decide to do it, they're going to have to get out into that 10 to 20 yard mid-range routes and deeper routes, because what the Seahawks will do is they'll load up in man coverage and they'll bring an extra guy up in the box to stop the run, and then they'll dare those receivers of the Eagles to beat them, and I don't know that they're capable of doing that. So I think this is the week that you're going to see a completely opposite game plan. Obviously they're going to want to run first, but if they're not successful, you're going to see a much more wide open game plan this week.
Yeah, this is going to be a real challenge. You know, we'll talk about this when we get to our picks, but you got a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach going out to play in Seattle and that whole 12th man deal. The Seahawks, like the Eagles, are 4-0 at home. The game is in Seattle, unfortunately, for the Eagles. This is going to be a real tough task for this team. So if they can somehow pull this one off, boy, they're going to have a lot of people jumping on that Wentz wagon. And I just hope it's a good game, and, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll take our chances, and then if you lose, you still have a pretty favorable schedule coming up after that. You know, I don't think the Giants are that good, and the Packers certainly aren't great this year, and they're not good at all on the road. You can win that game. The Bengals are so-so. You know, and you have all the division games, the Giants, Redskins, and Cowboys at home. So things could work in their favor. We shall see.
Well, and I think in this league, you know, it's proven every week that anybody can beat anybody, and, you know, the Seahawks are 6-2-1. And like you said, 4-0 at home, which is a great advantage to them. But they don't score a lot of points, but they certainly don't give up a lot of points either. So if you can get into a dogfight with them and get a little bit ahead, they're not a high-powered offense. And, you know, you make it score 24 points and win.
Yeah, they had that memorable 6-6 tie with Arizona a few weeks back. So this could be a defensive struggle. We shall see. It's going to be an interesting game, and, you know, 4:25 on Sunday. I'm looking forward to watching it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, hey, I did want to ask you your thoughts, because you're starting to get a little bit of heat from some people. Fletcher Cox, you know, now we don't get to, you know, really sit and break down the tape and all that kind of stuff, but Fletcher Cox is not – his name doesn't get called a whole lot. Now, whether he's being double-teamed all the time, creating situations for Brandon Graham to become a Pro Bowler, or if he's just not playing well. He makes an awful lot of money.
Yeah, he's certainly not earning that big contract, I don't think, at this point. I mean, he's there. He's certainly a big guy in the middle. I think he has 4 sacks. Most of those came early in the season. He's had a couple of games where he hasn't had 1 tackle. I think he had 1 tackle this past week. So, yeah, I want to see more out of Fletcher Cox for sure. But as you said, the defense is doing a good job, and maybe that's because he is drawing some double teams. Brandon Graham doing a pretty fine job. Connor Barwin's been up and down this year. But, yeah, I do want to see more out of Fletcher Cox for sure, because he's not earning that $90 million or whatever he's getting.
Ooh. No, I think that's pretty safe to say. I'd just like to be able to get a little better look at it and see what's going on there, because, I mean, there was one play the other day where he rushed the passer, where he took the guard and just moved him over and rushed the quarterback. He didn't end up making a play, but he flushed it out, and I believe it was Graham that did make the play. So he's still a force in there, but I think we need to see a little bit more. What now? And the other thing, too, Darren Sproles, I mean – gee whiz, who would have thought he not only is the number one back, which I think even though we'll see what happens this week, but I think he's the matchup that the Seahawks have trouble with. If they try to do what I said and they do some man coverage and you have to cover him man-to-man, now that creates an advantage for you.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny talking about Sproles. When he got all those carries those 2 weeks in a row, it was Peterson saying, no, Ryan Matthews is still the number one guy. And then this past week he admitted that, no, Darren Sproles is the number one guy now. We're going to give him the ball. And then what happens on Sunday? Sproles only gets a couple of carries. He's more of a receiver. And it's Ryan Matthews carrying the load at running back. So I don't know if Coach Peterson is just playing head games with the media or what. But at any rate, it is good to see Matthews getting back on track. That was by far his best game of the year. Ran for well over 100 yards and a couple of touchdowns. So they're going to need to see more of that from Ryan Matthews over the next 6 games if they're going to make a playoff run.
Yeah, and you wrote an article the other day on our website, phillypressboxradio.com, about the 12th man at the link. Do you want to share a little bit of that? You have your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was thinking it was just a few years back, the end of 2012 and the first year under Chip, when the Eagles had lost 10 games in a row at home. So the link was certainly not a real great place for the home team. And, you know, even still, there are only a few games over 500 since the link opened back in 2004. But all of a sudden this year, I don't know what it is, but it just seems like it's louder, and the Eagles are doing a much, much better job at home than they are on the road. They're, you know, not just the record where they're 4-0 at home. They're outscoring their opponents, I think, 108-38. So that's an average victory of 27-9.5. So that's pretty impressive. So give the fans credit. I mean, that was one thing I pointed out in the article. I heard Doug Peterson on with Angelo Cataldi on WIP on Monday morning. The first thing he said as far as, you know, who gets credit for this one, he said the fans. He said the fans were fantastic. They were really loud. And I think what they really like is watching the defense do a great job. And the defense certainly did a great job in the Minnesota game and this Atlanta game this past weekend. So, yeah, it is becoming, I don't know if it's on Seattle's level as yet, but it is becoming a 12th man for the Eagles. And as I noted a few minutes ago, they have four games still on the home schedule, including the three division games against the Redskins, Cowboys, and Giants, and that one Monday night game against the Packers a week from this Monday. So four games that are winnable at home, and I think the crowd's going to be a factor in all four. So, yeah, it's great to see that it almost feels like it's, you know, the vet back when the Eagles were really good at the vet. The home crowd is becoming a factor in these games again, and I love seeing that.
One final thought for you. Eagles ran the ball better than they have run the ball in a long, long time the other day. But now Alan Barbary is healthy. Stefan Wojcicki has stepped in and played very, very well. He is now going back to the bench, and we're going back to the original group. You in on that, or you buying or you selling there?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. What it does do now is it gives them a little extra depth because they got Wojcicki playing, you know, the last couple of games. So that was good to see. Barber or Barbary, however we want to say it, it changes from week to week. You know, he'll be back. Hopefully he's healthy and ready to go. And while we're on the subject of the offensive line, and I'm glad you brought that up, I want to give kudos to Jason Kelce. We've knocked him a lot this year. He's not having a great year. But I thought I watched the O-line on Sunday. He played a really good game on Sunday. He was, you know, clearing out a lot of space for Ryan Matthews. And I mean, you could see that he was energized. Maybe he's probably heard some of the talk himself, of course. How could you not? And I thought Jason Kelce at center did a real good job this past weekend.
Well, I thought he did, too, except for that holding call when I jumped through the TV and I grabbed him by his neck. When he took points off the board because he held, but I think it was a better matchup for him. I mean, it's all about matchups, you know. Him trying to chase Sean Lee around, and Sean Lee is really, really good and very fast. It's not a good matchup for Kelce to be trying to pull or trying to chase Sean Lee. He's just not going to get there this week.
Yeah.
Against this batch of linebackers, it was a much better matchup for him.
And while we're talking about penalties, Zach Ertz had a couple of good games, you know, finally getting involved in the attack, but still way too many penalties. I think Ertz had three penalties this past Sunday, so they got to clean that up. You know, you got to watch it. You don't want to hurt yourself with all these penalties, and they're still making too many mistakes. And if we have time, we'll talk about the not-called penalties, too, that hurt the Eagles temporarily last Sunday, too. I'm really getting a little bit of a problem with the referees this year, as I know you are.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, I don't know that I can ever remember a tight end getting three procedure penalties in the same NFL game.
No.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, even when the second one happened, I was shaking my head. And the third one happened, the other screen, the one I ran through to get the Kelce, I went through to get the Ertz on the second screen.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, yeah, they got to clean that up.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll get some time here on the back half. We'll talk some more Eagles. We got a lot of other things to do, and we got Fred to get on here. But let's get our trivia up on the board. And this is, like I said, all you got to do is guess on this one, Chet, or you can even Google it. You're going to get the answer, all right?
Okay.
All right. As we said, we'll be giving away the 8x10 color photo of Flyers legend and Stanley Cup champion Reggie Leach, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. The shopforkisses.org phone line to answer that trivia question is 929-477-2855. Here we go, Chet. The Eagles have played in Seattle a total of 8 times. How many have they won? 0. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8. Pick a number. It doesn't get any easier than that. Google it and find out.
So you have 9 options, 0 through 8. That's not an easy question, but as you said, we'll take you looking it up on Google. We want to give this Reggie Leach prize away tonight, so let's get an answer.
It took me about 2 seconds to find that question to answer it or to write it. So you certainly can find the answer just as quickly as I found the question.
Hey, is it time for the margarine yet?
It is.
Uh-oh. Let's hear some music. Talk, Bill.
It's Fred and Butter time with our special guest, Fred Hugo, joining us to provide a breakdown of this week's NFC East games. Fred, welcome back.
What's up, guys? My lips are about as bloody as Jordan Matthews when he got leveled over the middle there for my week.
Well, go ahead and pony up. Tell us what the standings are and how the week went.
Hey,
I
had a good week.
1-3. And Chet, yeah, well, you both did, but Chet, that was great. You were close to 4-0 there. I went 1-3. You went 3-1, and Bill went 3-1 as well. So that leaves us standing wise. I'm now 20-11-1 overall. Bill, you're now 18-13-1 overall. And then Chet, you're 14-17-1 overall. So another week like that,
Chet.
Oh, you're going to have to get almost 500.
Back from the dead. Hey, you know what the sad thing is? I was 3-1 in our picks, but in the Pick'em League that I run, I changed two of my picks, and I ended up switching to Pittsburgh and Cincinnati in the Pick'em League that I run. So I cost myself a couple of wins in that one.
Ah, that Pittsburgh game, ugh, that was so close.
Yes,
great
it
game,
was.
Though.
Well, Fred, this week we've got Baltimore at Dallas, Chicago at the Giants, Green Bay at Washington, and then, of course, the Eagles are at Seattle. Let's get it started.
Ravens 5-4 travel to Dallas 8-1. Dallas is 7.5, someplace 7-point favorites. I mean, if you weren't a believer last week in the Cowboys, you got to be a believer now, I think. That team definitely looks like the best in the NFC, I think, and maybe the NFL, and it all goes back to the MVP of that team, that offensive line. They've given up 13 sacks all year, only 13 sacks all year, and they're averaging 161 rushing yards a game. I mean, if you watch that game, you could – Ezekiel Elliott's a great back, but any back could have ran those runs, how wide those holes were open. But I think that the main difference with the Cowboys this year, aside from their offense, is they're actually playing defense. And that's the main thing. Before, they could always score points, but their defense would let up. They're actually playing defense well this year. I think they're third against the run and 12th overall. The Ravens' offense isn't very good at all. They're averaging like 85 yards a game on the ground. So I think they're going to try to get the rookie Kenneth Dixon involved more this week. Flacco has 9 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. They really can't move the ball on offense. The only time I've seen Dak struggle this season was against the Eagles. Most of the game that Sunday night game. And this defense, the Ravens, is the best he's seen. They're number one against the run, 5th against the pass. I think they're going to go down to Big D and actually win this one. I think, and I'm not trying to pick against Dallas. I really think the defense, they're going to be able to stop or at least contain the run, and Dak's going to have to beat them through the air. And I think that's how the Ravens are going to pull this one out. I see them winning this 20-17. Oh, and then also that stupid speech by Romo, I think that's going to bring a ghost over to Cowboys as well, now that the pressure's off Dak.
Oh, my. All right, so Fred picks Baltimore. Fred's smoking that medical marijuana again, I think. Anyway, the Cowboys have won 8 in a row and are convincing a lot of people that they could be legitimate Super Bowl contenders. Sorry, I just threw up in my mouth a little bit when I said that. Anyway, the Ravens are 5-4 and somehow atop the AFC North, but they have lost 3 of their last 5. They're just 2-2 on the road, and they are 0-2 against the NFC. Make it 0-3 this week. Fred's wrong. The stinking Cowboys win again, 24-16.
And I will say that I always root for Baltimore because I like John Harbaugh, but it ain't happening this week. They're going down Dallas, and Dallas is going to thump them just like they're thumping everybody else. I'm going Cowboys.
All right. Next
another game,
game
I pick up.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll see. We'll see. Chicago is going to travel to New York. Chicago's 2-7. Giants are 6-3. 7.5-point favorites at home. They had that Monday night game win against the Bengals where they just squeaked that out there, 21-20. The Bears are coming off. I mean, they got trounced by the Buccaneers. They're also going to be losing Kyle Long, and then Alshon Jeffrey is suspended for 4 games with PED, so he'll be out. The Giants, I mean, they continue to rely on the pass with Eli, really, and the Bears' pass defense, I mean, they're okay, but they're nothing special. I really don't see how the Bears can match up here. They really have nothing to play for. The Giants have won 4 straight. I've got the Giants winning this 20-13.
All right, I still can't believe the Giants are 6-3, but as a certain former Giants coach once famously said, you are what your record says you are. So, yeah, they're 6-3. Lots of nail-biters, but right now they're very much in the wild-card playoff hunt, and they should improve on those chances with the awful Bears visiting North Jersey. I have a hunch this one is going to end up being closer than it should be, but I look for the G-men to pull it out once again. Giants 27, Bears 20.
Well, I got an opportunity to watch just how bad the Bears really are again this week against Tampa, and they're awful. I don't, and then to go along with all the things you said, Fred, about Jeffries and Long and all that, I don't see that the Bears have a chance in this game. This is all Giants.
We all agree on that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Packers travel to Washington. Packers are 4-5. Redskins are 5-3-1. They come into the game 2.5-point favorites. They're the Sunday night game. A revenge game, really, for the Redskins from their playoff loss to the Packers last year. The Redskins offense looks really good. Cousins looks good. They switched starting running backs. Robert Kelly's been able to get them a lot of offense on the ground as well. The Packers come in on a 3-game losing streak. They just got killed by the Titans. And Aaron Rodgers just doesn't look like the quarterback we're used to seeing. On paper, I think there's no way you can't pick the Redskins here, but I just got a hunch that Rodgers is going to come alive. They're going to snap that 3-game losing streak, and they'll win this in a high-scoring game. I got 30-27 Packers.
Wow. On this one, I kind of agree with Fred. Here's what I wrote down in my notes. Well, first of all, who would have thought 2 months ago that the Redskins would be favored to beat the Packers in Week 11? But they are indeed 2.5-point favorites, as Fred noted. I know Green Bay has had lots of issues. They've struggled on the road. Aaron Rodgers has some issues with the head coach. But sometimes, like Fred said, you just got to go with your gut. And the Packers are a desperate team right now and really need this one, and I think it happens. I, too, think it's going to be high scoring. I also think the Packers are going to win by a field goal. Green Bay over Washington, 27-24.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the Packers the Redskins are not as bad as we want to make them out to be because they're the stinking Washington Redskins. They're 5-3-1. They score points. The Packers, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I never like to go against Aaron Rodgers, but they're stinking it up. And as you said, they are in need of a win, but I think the Redskins at home are going to be too much for them. I'm taking the Redskins.
Should be
yeah, there's
game.
Another we'll game for you, Bill.
Yep, there's my two
that,
games.
That,
to be tied for the
tie
league.
You. Tie for the
we'll
league.
See. We'll see.
All right. Our game of the week. Eagles traveling to Seattle. Seattle, a 6.5-point favorite. It opened up at, I believe, 4.5, so it's already up to 6.5. Seattle, 6-2. The Eagles are 5-4. Coming off my one pick last week, my one lock, at least the Falcons game that the Eagles won. Eagles are 1-4 on the road. I think you guys were talking about that earlier, and the Seahawks are 4-0 at home. The Seahawks offense isn't that great. Russell Wilson's getting more and more healthy. You can see he's starting to look more like himself as it goes. I can't see how the Eagles are going to even move the football at all. Typically, when you face a defense, you have a couple players that are Pro Bowl caliber, and then you find the holes in the defense. But with our receivers, I mean – I'm pretty sure some of their linebackers can cover some of our receivers. So I can't see how the Eagles are going to be able to move the ball. Offensively, the changes you were speaking about, Wisinski, who's played very well, is going back to the bench. I don't even know if they should play with that, how good the line's doing. C.J. Procise on the offensive side looked good Sunday night against the Patriots. I don't see how the Eagles can win this. They'll keep it close. I think the only way is if the defense scores some points, but I think Seattle got to 17-13.
All right. For me, well, here's the deal. The Eagles had a great formula to beat the Falcons last Sunday. Run the ball and run it effectively. Keep Atlanta's potent offense off the field and play tight defense and limit the Falcons' great receivers in terms of big plays and yards after the catch. They did all of that, but that game was at the Link. We talked about it. The Eagles are 4-0 at the Link. This weekend's game is at the home field of the other NFC team that happens to be 4-0, Seattle. The Seahawks aren't the dominating team that they were a couple of years ago when they went to the Super Bowl, but they're still pretty darn good, especially with that so-called 12th man. As I wrote on Monday, that is a tough task and a lot to ask of a rookie quarterback and rookie head coach. I'd love to see the upset, and who knows, maybe it'll happen, but I got to go with my head again and hope that I'm wrong yet again. Seahawks 24, Eagles 16.
Well. I'm going to go back to what I said earlier in the show, and I think that this game is all about matchups, and the Eagles don't match up. The wild card, I think, is Darren Sproles. I do think the Eagles can play good defense against them and hold them down in scoring, but I just don't know that they can generate enough offense. But I do think you're going to see a whole lot different offensive scheme this week than what we've seen so far this year. They're going to have to, or they're going to get their ears beat off them. So I think I've picked the Eagles every game this year, but I cannot think that they're going to win this game. I'm going to go 23-17 Seahawks. And I hate every minute of it.
There you go. Yep.
Fred,
what do you think? There we have it, guys. Looks like we're different. A couple there. Bill, yeah, there's a few out there. We're different on Ravens and the Redskins game. We all vary, so that's good.
Yep.
I mean, I hope you're right about the Ravens.
I think there's some good games here. All right, Fred.
Yeah.
Well, hey, another great job. And as always, you're on top of things, and we appreciate it. And right after we do our break, we're going to do the Tom McGinnis interview. If you want to hang around, you're more than welcome to do that.
Yeah, I'll hang around.
All right. Okay, well, let's thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.ShopForKisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043.
Hey, one quick note from our old buddy Steve Switkowitz, guys. He's helping out with a Penn State Rutgers viewing party this Saturday night at Tavern on Pine. That's in Huntington Valley, PA. Former Nittany Lion and NFL star Blair Thomas will be there. You can say hi and get a picture with Blair, a freebie. It begins at 7:30 Saturday evening at Tavern on Pine. That's 2840 Pine Road in Huntington Valley. In fact, Swit and I will be hanging out there as well, watching, hopefully, Penn State beat up on Rutgers.
Very nice. Well, hey, Chet, you had a chance to sit down with 76ers radio announcer Tom McGinnis this week in between games. And before we hear the interview, I want to ask you how it went and also say it's awful nice of these guys some of our last handful of guests to work with us around their busy schedules, even, you know, if we have to record them.
Yeah, Tom was great. We talked Monday afternoon while he was in Houston before the Sixers game with the Rockets. But here's the first takeaway, and I know this was going to be the case because I met him before briefly at the Sixers Beach Bash in August. When Tom is doing his thing, calling a game, he's just so full of energy talking about Sixers basketball, the alley-oop dunk at Embiid nailing the three. Are you kidding me? But in conversation, he's very low-key, mild-mannered, and collected, so that takes some getting used to. But outside of that, I think he gave us some great content. So are you ready to hear it?
You bet.
All right. Joining us on Philly Press Box Radio is longtime 76ers radio voice Tom McGinnis. Tom, welcome.
Thank you, Chet.
Hey, Tom, time sure flies. You're in your 22nd season as Sixers radio guy, which means you've been around for 11 head coaches. You've certainly seen a lot of changes in this organization, I guess.
Yeah, without question. I'm in Houston. Our guys are at practice here at the huge Toyota Center, and one of our coaches, my first coach when I was here, John Lucas, is on the staff of the Rockets, so we got a chance to say hi to him. But without question, man, it's still a great gig, and I love it as much as I did then.
Now, before joining the Sixers in 1995, you broadcast pretty much every other sport, including Cleveland Lumberjacks IHL hockey. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, I spent 2 years doing hockey, absolutely.
Lots of fun, I'm sure. Hey, let's talk Sixers. As with the last two seasons, they're really struggling to get victories, especially in the first couple of months of the season, and to hold second-half leads in the games that they've had them. Is that inexperience, a talent shortage, or what?
Well, I suppose it's a combination of things, but when you know you're talking about closing out games, some of these players have not been in this situation before. And we've had a whole number of players go through in terms of the last three-plus years that Brett Brown has been here. And some of these newer players are making some of the mistakes the older guys did. And I don't think entitled is the right word, but not unexpected in terms of a young player coming into the league and trying to, you know, win a ball game down the stretch against top-flight NBA competition, not easy. So it's understandable that there's been turnovers and miscues. But I think, too, again, injuries have been a part of it. You know, they signed Jared Bayless to be a backcourt player who could, you know, fill in at the point, bring the ball up, and he hasn't been able to play. I noticed that he's going to start playing with the 87ers, which is typically a sign that he's not that far away from NBA action, which will help. And then, of course, the injury to Simmons. But all in all, it's been a difficult start, and I think everybody, including Coach Brown, as you mentioned last week, has been a little bit surprised. And when you get into Stockton University and the way we played the first couple 3 days down there was really impressive. You really got excited. And then that last day, Ben Simmons got hurt and broke his foot. And like I said, there's been a lot of setbacks physically.
Now, one real bright spot, of course, so far has been Joel Embiid. Assuming he stays healthy, which is always the caveat, how big of an upside does Joel have?
Well, I think he's got a chance to be one of the best players in the NBA. I mean, as high as you can possibly go in terms of upside, he's got it all. I mean, I just talked to James Harden, and, you know, he was as bullish on Joe as anybody. So it's a unique skill package to have that size and the hand-eye coordination, the physical gifts, and the mental aspect in terms of the competitive nature that comes prerequisite with these top players. He's got a bright future, and, you know, it's going to take a little while because he hasn't played a lot and he's been out, but I think he can be as good as he wants to be and as good as we've seen in a long time in the NBA.
Now, you may not have this answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. If Nerlens Noel isn't traded, what happens when he comes back and Embiid and Jahlil Okafor are able to both play 25 to 30 minutes a night? How are they going to do that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's been difficult to intermesh two of those big guys at one point last year, Ja and Nerlens, and now, as you say, if Nerlens comes back with Joel and Ja, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, the one thing that's been, in a backwards kind of way, beneficial is that these guys, Okafor and Embiid, have both been on minutes restrictions. So there are, you can basically play them one, you know, at a time. And Rashawn Holmes actually didn't even play in one game. And he would probably be the guy that would suffer the most minutes-wise if Nerlens comes back and when he does. So, but that's the challenge of the coaching staff. And obviously, you know, in a larger picture, they've talked about being positionally balanced. And that's something I think they'll try to achieve going forward.
You mentioned Ben Simmons a moment ago. In January, perhaps, we'll finally see Simmons in a regular season game. Are you excited about having the number one draft pick on the court again?
Well, without question, I think everybody saw in the summer league what he's capable of for a player of that size at 6'10", to be able to handle the ball and distribute and run a team. And then, you know, at that length, I think he's going to be a benefit defensively as well. So he's, without question, I mean, he's a unique talent. And today, as we speak, marks a six-week mark since his surgery, so hopefully he's progressing. And at a time in the future, after imaging, I'm sure they'll be able to make a determination whether he can begin weight-bearing on that foot. And he's a terrific player, so I'm sure he's, you know, really anxious to get back out there, but he's going to have to be, you know, 100% healthy and declared ready to go and like that. But to have a talent like that into the mix and for him to get experience in the NBA is going to be important for both him and the Sixers as the months and seasons move on.
Hey, another newcomer this year, Dario Saric. What's your impression so far of Dario?
He's been great. He is solid in every department. And, you know, he's played professionally. The thing you have to realize, Jim, is these kids like Saric, 22 years old, but he's already played overseas for 5 years as a professional player. His father was a pro and a good player. And he'll tell you himself. I mean, he said it the other day where he's basically been raised to be a professional basketball player. He's solid, and I think his shooting has improved, from what I can understand, dramatically over the last 3 years. And I think he's only going to get better as he understands the nuances of the NBA, the NBA jargon, because there's the language of the NBA in terms of the coach speak and whatnot for the players is a little bit different as he gets through the league, the travel, the entire experience. I think he's just going to be another really good player for the Sixers. I don't know that he's going to be a superstar, but he's got qualities to be a big-time player, somebody who contributes in a lot of ways for many years for the Sixers.
Hey, two quick broadcasting questions. You work solo most of the time doing the games. Is that ever tough in terms of the drain on filling time and the drain on your voice?
It's not really. I got to be honest. There's so much stimuli out there in terms of the 10 players on the court, the referees, the teams, the storylines, the action of an NBA game, and then everything else that we kind of work in there from the business of basketball, so to speak. I've never found it difficult to fill the time I played, albeit on a smaller level, but still having had an athlete's mindset, I think, has helped me in terms of correlating, the basketball, the color commentary side, if you will. And then as far as my voice, no, I just, sometimes I get excited. You need to ratchet it back because you might have a game the next night. But it's been a labor of love. It's been a dream come true for all of these years, and I hope to do it for many years to come.
And, Tom, one of the phrases we associate with you is, are you kidding me? Any idea when and how that originated?
I'm not exactly sure. I know there's Laura Price, who's been with our franchise as long as I have, said that it was born out of a session in creating what we call wild lines. In other words, maybe for a commercial or something like that. And that could be true. But I also remember kind of the amazement, if you will, of NBA basketball players and the things they pull off, going all the way back to when Allen Iverson was a rookie and for the short time he teamed with Jerry Stackhouse, and just they would like throw alley-oops to one another, and like that kind of amusement of, oh my gosh, look what's going on out here. And now it's so many people say that in everyday life, that phrase, are you kidding me? And it can come in different forms, like where a call has been made and you don't think it's a good call, and just a whole different bunch of intonations. And one thing, too, like going back, I'd been a sportscaster on television for a number of years before getting full-time into radio play-by-play. And one of my old roommates used to say, you need a shtick. And I always felt like you needed to be good and solid throughout before you came up with any, catchphrase or gizmo or wearing a bow tie every, whatever it might be.
Right.
And I've always prided myself on that and being thorough and being prepared and covering all the things, being a good reporter, because that's in the end what the radio play-by-play is all about. So no, I don't, not specific. I have a phrase, and I guess in the end that's a bit of a shtick, but in the end I think I'd like to be referred to or thought of as somebody who's covered it all and is able to bring a lot of different things to the broadcast.
Absolutely. Just a couple of quick hitters before we finish up, Tom. True or false, growing up a couple hours from Chicago, you dreamed of one day playing for the Bulls?
Well, when I was younger, I thought about an NBA career. I think anybody, that's the highest play, that there is. So I loved the Bulls growing up. I'd have to say true.
All right. Did you have any sports broadcasting idols growing up and starting in the business?
I listened to all the broadcasters in Chicago. I mean, Harry Carey was, when I first grew up, he'd come from St. Louis to be with the White Sox before everyone remembers him with the Cubs. But I listened to him there, and then the Cubs actually had a guy named Jack Brickhouse. And, I'm in Houston, and this is where he ended up, and that would be Jim Durham, who passed away a few years ago and was the voice of the Bulls when I grew up. And he ended up being the voice of NBA radio and was just a dear friend to so many of us. And I still impart a lot of the phrases that we call them JD, Jim Durham, had when he was with the Bulls. I can't point to one specific person that I modeled myself after or I looked at as an idol. But I would say there are literally hundreds of broadcasters that help to shape how I see and how I broadcast the game.
Just one final question, Tom. You were here for Allen Iverson's entire career. Do you have one or two favorite AI moments?
Well, you know, again, when you do this so many times, I've done almost 2,000 games, and if you include some of my minor league experiences, I'm sure I've eclipsed that. But I just, that year that the Sixers went to the finals, you know, and some of his performances were just so incredible. I guess his ability to do it night after night, it was just an incredible talent to have that athletic ability and to be that size, and the fact that he was such an iconic player in franchise history and in the history of the NBA, a Hall of Fame player. It was really special to watch that team, to broadcast those games, and particularly the rise of that team, because hopefully we're about to embark on that here with this current group of Sixers, because that's the fun. You have to embrace it all. But to see a team evolve right before your eyes, start to knock off some benchmarks, that's what that Iverson-led group did in 99, 2000, 2001, where they became one of the best teams in the NBA. That's what I remember about Iverson's time with the Sixers.
And as you said, hopefully better days are ahead for this franchise right now. Let's hope for the best. Tom, thanks for visiting Philly Press Box Radio. Congratulations on your 22nd year as the voice of the Sixers.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the time.
And there you have it, guys. Still with us, Bill?
Chet, just to let you know, talking about early starts and finishing, the Sixers have a 20-point lead tonight, 37-17 at the 9:50 mark of the second quarter. It's let's see if we can put this one away without Joel Embiid.
Without Joel Embiid, how about that?
Yeah, and but I did want to get a comment for both you and Fred before Fred goes, you know, I know how Fred thinks about Embiid, but we've seen a few more games, and everybody we talk to thinks nothing but ceiling for Embiid. He's going to be that good.
Fred?
Chet.
No, Fred has him in the Hall of Fame already. I don't know if I'd go that far, but you know how I
gush over him, and I mean this guy hasn't played basketball in 2 years. And he's still playing at this level. He's playing, whatever, 20 minutes a night or whatever it is, and he's averaging 18 points a game. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's doing. He's got to work on the turnovers. He's turning the ball over a lot. But, I mean, you got to consider everything. He mimics Hakeem Olajuwon, but I love him, as you know.
Yep, and I'm with you, man. He's just going to get better and better. I can't wait to watch him develop. I don't know how they're going to do it when, you know, they're both playing 30 or 32 minutes a night, he and Okafor. And like I said with Tom, I don't know what happens when Nerlens comes back. I assume they're going to trade somebody, probably Nerlens, but we shall see. But, you know, they have some winnable games now, too. Tonight they have Washington. They're beating them so far pretty handily. Then they got Minnesota and Phoenix over the next few days. So a couple of bad teams from the West that they're going to be going against. So, you know, maybe they can start winning a few games and feeling better about themselves and, you know, being more competitive in every game.
I'll be there on Saturday.
Nice.
What's that, Fred?
I said I'll be there on Saturday. And I was going to say great interview, by the way, Chet, as well.
Oh, thanks. Awesome. Yeah, Phoenix in town Saturday. Thank you, Fred.
Yep. And, you know, Fred, one thing about your comparison with Olajuwon, it's awful early, obviously, but I think this guy's a better shooter than Olajuwon already.
Oh, God. He drains threes. He hits all his free throws. He's worked on his game, and it's just the hard work is paying off for him. I just hope he keeps on at it, which there's no reason why he won't. And I know I've been saying Hall of Famer, but, I mean, even if he's false, I really think he's going to be one of those players that is just like Allen Iverson. Every single year, he's just going to fill the stadium, and it's going to be get some shooters around him. And, oh, my gosh, I don't even know. And then you add Simmons. I mean, this is going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch.
All right, Fred. Well, hey, we'll catch you next week.
All right, see you. Thank you.
All right.
See you, Fred.
Hey, Chet. The Hall of Fame season is complete. We had the induction of Allen Iverson to the Basketball Hall of Fame earlier this year, and now it's official. The Big E, Eric Lindros, is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Pat Quinn as well.
Yeah, Bill, you know how I felt about the Big E, one of my favorite Flyers to watch ever. The guy was just so big, but at the same time highly skilled. His numbers speak for themselves. I think he averaged 1.5 per game during his Flyers career. Just a shame how things ended in Philly, of course, but Hall of Fame worthy, absolutely, and it was pretty nice what he said the other night about his time in Philly, the organization, the great Philly fans, etc., and then bringing his brother Brett up on stage with him at the end. Classy move, and, you know, good for Eric. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I just – how could you be a Flyers fan and not like Eric Lindros? He didn't have to be your favorite player necessarily, although he was most people's favorite player. But, boy, he just did things that haven't come around since, and at least in this town, and even with the good players that we have had, not many did it like the Big E did.
And it was also nice to see Renberg and LeClaire there with him as well, so that was kind of fun.
Yeah, Renberg, LeClaire was there. Hextall was there. There was a handful.
Clark,
it was like a Flyer reunion there.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know, I didn't realize this. I guess kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit. But all the concussion rules and all the stuff that has come up in the last handful of years, Eric Lindros was the leader of that. That was all part of his legacy. Is the safety of the players came from that those concussions that cut his career short.
Yep, you got it.
Yep. Well, hey, one other note. We'll jump over to the Phillies right quick. Jeremy Hellickson, 1 year, $17.2 million to re-sign with the Phillies, and Chet Helly has a career 61-58 record. I want to ask you, what you think it would be like to go to bed saying to yourself, am I going to take $17.2 million tomorrow morning when I wake up or test free agency and see if I can get $50 million over 3 years? Tough decision to make. Good or bad for the Phillies, Mr. Chesko?
A nice problem. Well, you know, I have this scenario in my mind where the Phillies get the response from Hellickson that he would, in fact, take that $17.2 million offer from the team, and then the Phillies brass saying out loud, great, but muttering under their breath, no, all that money for a 500 pitcher, and there goes our draft pick. But, you know, hey, in reality, it's not the worst thing in the world to bring a veteran guy back to lead an otherwise very young staff. Is he worth $17.2 million? Of course not. But, you know, that's baseball economics these days. So let's hope he stays healthy and, you know, can win another 12 or 13 games for the Phillies in 2017.
Well, maybe he ends up being trade bait at some point. As long as he's not holding kids down, that's the thing that I'm worried about. I'd love to see a kid get up there and win some games. Well, hey, we had another first-time winner in this week's Philly Press Box Radio Pick'em Pool. And it happens to be my son, Chet, Billy, with a 10-4 record, beating Adam Ujesic in the tiebreaker. Chet, you want to hear chirping going on? It is on full blast here about winning this week.
I stay out of that.
With my record. I hear you. In the season standings to win the signed Eagles Reggie White mini helmet after 8 weeks, we got 11 weeks in the books. Remember, 1 week drops. Gene McCann has snuck back on top after a week's break by one win over Dave Capper and Jimmy Wilson. This thing's down to percentage points, Jed. It's going to be really close. There's still 7 weeks left. There's still 16 players within 5 games, and there is plenty of time left. It's going to be fun down the stretch.
Time to make my move.
Yeah, it is time. You better not wait too much longer, I don't think.
No.
All right. Well, hey, you know, I will be taking next week off since I'll be going to the Flyers-Lightning game here in Tampa on Wednesday night before flying to Philly for Thanksgiving morning to be with the family. It's the Flyers' only time here this season, so I had to take the opportunity to go see them. But what do you have lined up for next week's show?
Well, full disclosure, Bill, you booked this guest before remembering that you were going to miss the show. But anyway, it is former NFL and USFL tight end Ken Dunek, who spent time with several teams, including the Eagles and Stars. I'm sure Ken's going to have plenty of thoughts about the Birds and much more. We'll, of course, have Fred and Butter time. And Steve Switkiewicz is going to stop by also to talk a little Flyers hockey with me.
Well, there you go. Swit can become the other guy.
The other guy, yes.
The other guy. All right, Chet, hey, we got to keep saying this every week. We have to say thank you. This new website, it just blows me away every day. PhillyPressBoxRadio.com continues to grow. We've had nearly 1,200 visitors again this week. It's just I just can't thank everybody enough. It's been absolutely amazing, and we just keep the numbers keep rolling on to the point that I had to go back to Matt, our designer, and ask him if he could change the number counter at the bottom to add more digits in already. And he couldn't believe it. So Good stuff.
We do appreciate it. We try to give everyone some great, fresh, new content every day, stories about all the Philly teams from the local papers and elsewhere, plus our takes on what's happening on the Philly sports scene, too. You can even find our latest weekly show right there on PhillyPressBoxRadio.com. Join us daily. Visit it.
Good stuff. Hey, let's get to our signing update of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. The Eagles' Bo Allen has been lined up to be in the store in December. And also, don't forget, if you have any of your Christmas framing you want done, any of your memorabilia, Carl can have that for you pretty much in a week's time, and it looks beautiful. So good stuff there. For all the details, go to our website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com. Click on the Carl's Cards and Collectibles banner on the top. It'll take you directly to Carl's website, or stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA. Or give Carl a call, 610-789-4996. You can also contact Carl on Twitter, at Carl's Cards. And Chet, you stopped by Carl's last Saturday and visited with the Hendersons and one Bernie Perrant.
Always great to see Bernie. I didn't get to talk with him too much as he was busy signing quite a large number of photos and other merchandise. But as you know, he took a nice picture with me and a great one with Carl as well, holding a replica of the Stanley Cup. I'm sure you've seen that one. I love Bernie, and Carl's okay too.
Ah, there you go. All right, Mr. Chesko, we're right about on time. Do you have a parting shot tonight? I know you do.
I do. It's been a difficult 5 years for Penn State's football program ever since the Jerry Sandusky case blew up in the fall of 2011. There were all of those Sandusky allegations, Joe Paterno's forced retirement, followed a few months later by his passing, then those unprecedented sanctions that began in the summer of 2012. It's been a long road back, but on October 22nd out in Happy Valley, the Nittany Lions knocked off number 2 Ohio State, a 24-21 upset victory, the school's biggest win in 11 years, and they moved into the top 25 for the first time in several years. What have they done since then? How about another 3 straight wins, including a come-from-behind victory out in Indiana last Saturday, to improve to 8-2 on the season, 6-1 in the Big Ten, and this week a move up in the college football rankings to number 8 in the country. Now, I don't expect them to be a player in the national championship picture just yet, even though there is a scenario where they could jump up into the top 4. But it is fun to watch Penn State football again, to watch the development of quarterback Trace McSorley, running back Saquon Barkley, and wideout Chris Godwin and others. A lot of folks were ready to give up on Coach James Franklin last season and after this year's 2-2 start, but give the guy credit. He's got his players believing that they can compete with the big guys again, and as a result, they're once again respectable and respected. The Penn State football program is on the rise, and this alum is definitely enjoying it.
As you should. Good stuff. They're playing well. Let's see how this finishes out. Rutgers and Michigan State, and if the pieces fall together for them, they're going to play for the Big Ten Championship.
Yeah, how about that?
All right. Well, hey, Chet, we've gotten to the top of the hour already, so let's thank our special guest, 76ers radio announcer Tom McGinnis, Fred Hugo, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday, November the 23rd. You can listen through our website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, our Facebook page, or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/PhillyPressBoxRadio. Or on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.